Welcome back to the Real Life Theology Podcast. Today we continue our discussion on the disciples' mind, a session that was taken straight from Ozark Christian College. And specifically in this episode, we explore the concept of postures versus gestures and emphasizing the need for biblical wisdom to discern when certain responses are appropriate. So with no further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Daniel in just a second is going to talk about how we navigate differences between Christians. A lot of the differences that we have with one another, frankly, when it comes to things like politics and things like that, a lot of the differences that we have with one another is that I might be living right here, like this might be my go-to, but then another person, like this might be their position. And we fight with each other because we're actually occupying a different position in how we engage with the world around us. Now, really quickly, I put over here postures versus gestures. And I stole that language from an author named Andy Crouch, wrote an awesome book on culture. And his point is basically this: each one of these positions is appropriate from time to time as a gesture. There are times where a Christian should be hostile. There are certain things in our culture that we absolutely should and must be hostile towards. Not to get off on my hobby horse right now, but one thing that I find particularly troubling is when leaders in the church expect more public courage from their young people on certain cultural issues than they possess themselves. So you take an issue like, again, not to go off on some tangent, but you take an issue like the transgender moment that we're having. Pastors in the church being silent on the issue, the kids in their church going to school, dealing with this issue every day, we expect the kids in our church to have more public courage on this position than we do. I find that troubling. I think there are some things in our culture that demand that very direct approach. You know, you take the porn industry, right? The sex trade. That these things demand, I think, a gesture of hostility. There are also things in our culture that demand a gesture of accommodation. There are times where isolation is appropriate. This whole week is an exercise in isolation, isn't it? For a strategic purpose. This college is a countercultural college for a purpose. So each one of these is appropriate as a gesture. Where it becomes a problem, though, is when Christians adopt these as postures. And a posture is sort of our default position, our go-to default position, where we respond to everything in our culture with hostility, and we don't balance that with grace. Or we respond to everything in our culture with accommodation, and we don't balance that with difficult truths. Or our knee-jerk reaction to living in Babylon is to put our head in the sand and isolate ourselves as much as possible. So these gestures become problems when they morph into a posture that we adopt. So the question is, how do we know when to adopt a certain gesture towards the world? And the best answer that I can come up with, I could talk a lot longer about this, but the best answer I could come up with right now is biblical wisdom. A wisdom that comes not from this world, but a wisdom that comes from above. A wisdom that comes from Scripture and the Spirit. We need to, part of learning how to think well about our world is also learning to ask God, God, give me the wisdom to know, give me the wisdom to discern, how am I going to respond to life in this culture? How am I going to respond as a leader? How am I going to respond to the various issues that are going to come up when I'm providing leadership to people who are living in this world? What am I going to say about all these sorts of issues? And not just what am I going to say, but how am I going to say it? We need to lean into sober-minded biblical wisdom to know when the proper gesture is required of us. And this takes some trial and error. This takes a little bit of asking for forgiveness at times when we screw it up. But what I do know is that it's not particularly healthy for us as Christians to have just one posture when it comes to trying to navigate this difficult tension of living in the world. I've talked long enough. I want to hand it over to Daniel.
I actually didn't want to talk about the book today. I wanted us to have maybe a dozen people come up and share testimonies of how it had just changed their life. But the book just came out, so nobody's read it. So that didn't work. But there's a so Chad talked mainly about, you know, how Christians can think well about the culture out there. And I want to speak just a little bit on how Christians can think well when it comes to the church and relationships within the church. So there's a famous sculpture by a French sculptor named Auguste Rodin. In French, it's called Le Pinceur. Would you say that with me? Le Pinceur. Okay, very good. Here in America, we call it the Thinker. It's a guy leaning forward, hand under chin. Looks like he's really concentrating hard. He's thinking hard about something, right? And isn't this just a great portrait of what it means to be a thinker? Get off by yourself and think really hard, right? Actually, I'm not convinced that that's a good portrait of what it means to be a thinker at all. The more I think about thinking, the more I realize this sculpture's missing a lot. Obviously, he's missing, you know, clothes, but he's also missing other persons, right? Chad and I believe that the best thinking is done first with humility before God. That's where it starts. The, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's where it starts. And it's also done with humility around each other. We do our best thinking when we are asking each other for advice. What do you think about such and such? As we help each other along under God, around each other, that's when we do our best thinking. How about why we do our best thinking? Sure, you know, there is a part of thinking well that helps us personally, you know, personal development, personal growth, but a major reason that we need to think better is that it has to do with connecting with other people. In other words, one reason that we need to think well is the same reason that we learn a new language. You get on Duolingo, you might be by yourself, you know, on your phone, but if you're doing Duolingo in order, why are you learning that language? It's so that you can connect better with other people. And it's the same thing with being a good thinker, being a better thinker. Paul was a brilliant thinker. Now, obviously, that wasn't enough. He was a great thinker going exactly the wrong direction until Jesus came to him and got him going the right direction. But Paul was a great thinker. And so when Paul was in Athens, Paul could connect well with Epicureans and Stoics, with atheists and pantheists. Why? He had done a lot of thinking about their views, even reading and even memorizing from their poets. You know, he was able to equally live in the Jewish world and the Gentile world. Now, if we rewind to the Old Testament, the prophet Daniel was absolutely brilliant. And he was just as able to connect with the Babylonian world as with his own Jewish world. It is so important that we think well in Babylon. Thinking well is like learning a new language so that you can build bridges to different types of people, people outside your church. But what I want to talk about right now is how thinking well can help us connect better with people in our own church. When there is disunity, fighting, tension in your church, raise your hand if that's ever happened in your church. Okay. Just one of you. Okay. How long have you been in ministry? Okay. What I want to talk about right now, again, is when there is disunity, when there is tension, when there's fighting in your church, it's time to pray hard and to think well. Pause, humble yourself before God, surround yourself with wise people, open the Bible and think well. There's an article by a guy named Aaron Wren called The Three Worlds of Evangelicalism. And Aaron Wren describes three stages of how the church and the culture have gotten along with each other here in America. The three worlds of evangelicalism. And he says that first, there was the positive world where society had a basically positive view of Christianity that lasted until 1994. Then came the neutral world where society viewed Christianity neutrally, not that bad, not that great. That was from 1994 till 2014. But ever since 2014, we have been living in the negative world, he calls it, in which society largely has a negative view of Christianity. So increasing hostility out there and increasing hostility in here, in our churches. The fighting and the disunity within our churches is a major reason why we need thoughtful, wise leaders who can connect well with people and can connect people with each other. Thoughtful, wise leaders who care passionately about unity in truth for the sake of the gospel. That's the restoration movement. Unity in truth for the sake of the gospel. So I want to tell you about two people who are going to make it hard. Two people in your church who are going to make it harder on everybody, increasing the hostility within the church. And again, this is why we need thoughtful leaders. And here they are. First is a guy by the name of Heresy Hunter. First, let me just be very, very clear. There are heresies that do need to be hunted down. And we're also going to talk about our second person is going to be Tower Toppler. And there are some towers that will need to be toppled as well. But let me describe these two people, and I think you'll see that these two people are not caring much about unity in truth for the sake of the gospel. They're thinking about something else. And so let's start with heresy hunters. To them, basically everything is a heresy to be called out. They're so eager to spot progressivism that anything you do that's just a little out of the ordinary is automatically progressivism. Now, if anyone's read any of my articles on renew.org for any number of articles, you know I'm not a fan at all of progressivism. I believe it's a major problem in the churches today. But a heresy hunter is someone who sees heresies everywhere. So if you in your church, you try to, let's say, acknowledge that there has been racial injustice in our culture, then you're progressive. If you try to acknowledge that, yeah, there have been times when Christians have been unloving toward gay people, you're automatically a progressive. If you try to acknowledge that, you know, maybe Genesis 1 and 2 allows for an old earth or old universe, you know, you're automatically a progressive. If it moves, you're a progressive. And here's something fascinating about heresy hunters is they are self-fulfilling prophets. Call everybody a progressive for long enough, it's going to make a lot of people say, forget this, these people are impossible to please, I'm just going to become a progressive. They create what they're looking for. Now again, some heresies, totally worth hunting, but these are people who are so eager to find heresy and so impossible to please that they create heretics. They create what they're looking for. Secondly, we have tower topplers. Tower topplers are people who, they love the version of Jesus that they see cleansing the temple, okay, upsetting the tables, flinging the doors open, and that's what they love to do, especially to evangelicals. Instead of saying, hey, I know you're a progressive, they're going to say, hey, deep down, I know you're just a white Christian nationalist, or deep down, I know you're really a fundamentalist. To tower topplers, everything is a tower to topple, a tower to ram into. And by ramming into towers, they make everybody super defensive. Are you a white person in America? Well, then deep down, you're probably a racist. Do you love the idea of global missions, of missionaries going and preaching the gospel in other nations? Well, then deep down, you're probably a colonialist, probably an imperialist. If you're a Christian who also happens to vote Republican, man, tower topplers are coming with their battering ram, and they'll say, I know what you're really doing deep down. You don't care about immigrants. You know, you don't care about the poor. You don't care about the oppressed. You wear the name of Jesus, but you're just so unchristlike. You don't care about the unborn. You just care about controlling women's bodies. You care more about the Second Amendment than about the Great Commission, all of which causes us to feel super defensive, right, to where you'll get angry enough. You'll get angry enough to where you'll prove them right. You really are all, they'll say, see, you really are all about maintaining your power. Or let's say you're a Christian who believes in traditional marriage, but you're not even political. Even still, they'll come at you with the battering ram. You hate gays. You're just trying to You're just trying to maintain your heteronormativity. Slanderous accusations that cause you to feel super defensive to where you'll get angry enough to prove them right, that you really are a hateful person. And I suppose it is nice to be able to say, okay, what have we built around Jesus that isn't Jesus? And let's clear it away. But listen, a lot of what tower topplers want to topple, they're literally trying to topple, clear away what's in the Bible. Now, there's something fascinating about tower topplers. They are self-fulfilling prophets. They'll provoke you into being a defensive, ugly version of yourself. And then they'll be able to say, see, you're so hateful, you're so angry, because all you care about is power. Here's what makes heresy hunters and tower topplers in your church so dangerous. It's that they make their fellow Christians worse. They create what they're looking for. I look down my nose at you, suspecting that deep down you're probably a progressive, and I treat you that way with mistrust instead of trying to connect with you. Well, you know, I'll probably create what I claim to be against. Or if I look at your theological beliefs and your political convictions and I start ramming them, oh, you're such a fundamentalist, oh, you're such a Christian nationalist, I'll just create defensiveness to where you'll have to bolster your tower into a fortress. Heresy hunters, tower topplers, they make their fellow Christians worse, and they create what they claim to be against. So, how can we think well? How can we think well in such a way that we connect better with the people in our churches and help them connect better with each other? Unity in truth, for the sake of the gospel. If in your church you care about unity and truth for the sake of the gospel, I just want to suggest that you think hard about four things, okay? One, faith. Two, questions. Three, levels. Four, words. Again, if you care about unity in truth for the sake of the gospel, I just want to put these out there. Four things. One, faith. We'll start with that. When there is hostility in your church, theological tension in your church, please always keep pointing people back to Jude, verse 3, chapter 1, verse 3, where Jude talks about the faith once for all entrusted to the saints. Keep pointing people back to the faith. If we strayed into making it a faith mainly for my kind of people, or for my political interests, we've got to have the humility to admit that. The faith. Let's dig into the scriptures. Let's make sure we're thinking clearly about what is the faith that has been entrusted to the saints. Do you want unity in truth for the sake of the gospel? Think hard about the faith. Secondly, I want to encourage you to think hard about two questions. These are a couple of questions that when there is hostility in the church, theological tension in the church, both of these questions will help to dial back the anger, I really believe, and it will help to dial up the grace and the empathy. Question number one is this, where is this person coming from? You can ask that, where is this person coming from? You know, have you stopped to consider what hurtful experiences they might be reacting against? What unfortunate church interactions might they be speaking from? You know, asking, where is this person coming from? And what hurtful experiences are they speaking from? That's both humbling and it's very helpful. So that's the first question I would encourage you to ask. You know, where's this person come from? Question number two, whom is this person trying to reach? Whom is this person trying to reach? Are you debating with a Christian in an urban environment who's trying to reach progressive-leaning people for Jesus? Or are you arguing with a Christian trying to reach a rural community in a red state? Perhaps your friend is trying to reach people who identify as LGBTQ with the gospel. Perhaps your friend has a heart to reach Muslims, and that's why he's taking a critical stance toward, you know, maybe a social media post that you make that maybe, you know, maybe brands all Muslims as jihadists. You know, always ask yourself, whom are they trying to reach? Whom are they trying to reach? When there's hostility within the church, theological tension, think hard about one faith, two questions. Again, where is this person coming from? Number two, whom is this person trying to reach? Number three, three levels. In our faith, not every element is equally important. There are the essentials, right? The bullseye beliefs. And then there are the non-essentials. But even when it comes to the non-essentials, some are really important to get straight out of faithfulness to Jesus, while others are a matter of personal conviction. This is the difference in 1 Corinthians between Paul telling the Corinthian Christians, hey, you need to get unified. You need to stop fighting each other. You need to stop having these factions. This is super important, right? But then him also saying, hey, when it comes to food sacrificed to idols, you've got freedom there. So three levels. What's essential? You know, you can't be saved without the essentials. What's important? They don't save you, but you need to get them. You need to try to get them right. Faithfulness to Jesus. And what's personal? What's a personal element where we really have freedom? Matters of personal conviction. When there's hostility in the church, theological tension in your church, think hard about one faith, two questions. Again, where are they coming from? Whom are they trying to reach? Number three, what's essential? What's important? What's personal? And lastly, four words. Just want to leave you with this, and then we'll take questions. Four words that I believe will tremendously help you in getting along with your fellow Christians in order to bring unity. Think like a missionary. As a foreign missionary, you would try to love the people as they are, even when you find features in the culture that really bothered you. You would still try to find features that you could admire in the culture. You'd look for bridges for the gospel. You'd find echoes of the gospel story within the culture. Okay, I want you to think like a missionary wherever God places you and view other Christians as missionaries in their context, respecting that the people that they're trying to reach will influence how they share the gospel. Again, when there's hostility within the church, theological tension within the church, think hard about one faith, two questions, where they come from, whom they're trying to reach. Number three, three levels, what's essential, what's important, what's personal. Four words, think like a missionary, because again, we're aiming for unity in truth for the sake of the gospel. Because of hostility outside the church and hostility in the church, let's pray hard and let's think well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you're interested in getting the book, The Disciple's Mind, check out the link in the description. It'll take you straight to it. And also, breakout at the gathering. If you are interested in learning more about the book, there will be a breakout at Renew.org's Courageous Renewal Gathering happening April 29th and 30th. Now come back next week to hear a conversation about navigating complex issues in faith and modern life. I hope you have a great week.